What happened then with the bank day?
Well, the bank day I thought was a great idea, even because it actually encouraged me to sell more magazines, so I'd be sure and have some money to deposit. And then the bank started, it grew into a big thing because, you know, with all the kids and everything in that day, the banks needed deposits. So they got into a fight over which one was going to get the bank day, and they tried to work out a deal where this one had it 1 year and this one had another year, and it got to be such a big hullabaloo that they just stopped the bank day altogether to get away from the argument. And it was a shame because to this day I remember a lot of good lessons out of that, great lessons about how money can grow and how selling nickel magazines can develop into a big business. At Glatzotainment Kichla, what nicer top off a luncheon can you ask for? Okay.
Frank, what was your social life like during your high school years?
Well, I really think that you ought to tie into this the discussion about Nan's mother, because here I was in a small town where cousins moved to New York because there weren't any Jewish fellows, and the fellows stayed in Marion, and it was very difficult for us to date non-Jewish girls. It was a strain on our parents, so we had to do it clandestinely. In the meantime, I'm living next door to the daughter of George Zimmerman, who was one of the town's leading merchants. And he had two daughters, Nanette and Bobby. Bobby, who was Nanette's sister, died at the tragic death at the age of 16. She got colitis that today they can treat with sulfas and penicillin, and it would have been. And they let it go a little bit too long, and by the time they got her to the Mayo Clinic, they opened her up and closed her up. It was just a finish. And it was a terrible tragedy. In the meantime, Nanette lived next door to me, and she was 6 years younger. And she was the little rascal next door that when her dad and my dad were schmoozing on that front porch, why, she would come over and sneak up behind me and tear up my newspapers, and I would get so damn mad at her, I'd chase her. Pop says, "Take it easy, you get another newspaper." And it was that kind of a beginning, you know, but I had that storybook kind of romance that started out that way, and I married the girl next door. And but in the meantime, you ask about social life, we went out, the fellas went out, and I dated occasionally in school, but it wasn't exactly, according to any plan or anything. And if I went out with the same shiksa two times in a row and Mom found out about it, it's, you know, teure Geschichte, you know, family council. But I was drafted into the military in July of 1941, before Pearl Harbor. And by that time, I had looked at Nanette differently than the kid that tore up my papers and everything. And but we weren't really serious until I had to be gone away from her for a few months. And the more I thought about it, one thing led to another, and we decided to get married. We were supposed to get married in January of 1942. And because of Pearl Harbor and because of my being drafted into the Army, all leaves were canceled. And there's a little humor attached to that, too, because when I went to the Army, they asked me what I did, and I happened to be in the hotel and restaurant equipment business with my brothers, and I was in the engineering department and designed laid out kitchens. When I went to the Army, I told them exactly what I did. I thought you're supposed to tell them the honest-to-God answer to an honest-to-God question. So they looked at me, you design kitchens, you know kitchens. Yes, yes, yes. So what do they do? In typical Army style, they send me to Lowry Field, Denver, Colorado, to be a cook to the Cooks and Baker School. What kind of a connection there is there? I haven't the slightest idea, but I did learn more about climbing into big dishwashers and operating mechanical potato peelers and everything that I used to sell. I learned more about it in the 6 months in the Cooks and Baker School in Denver. And then we were supposed to get married December, and of course all the leaves were canceled, including the very important Cooks and Baker School schlemiels who didn't know anything about cooking. And I spent all my time on KP duty out there. That's what I was doing. I never got near a baker that taught me anything. But we wound up getting married in Denver, and I was in the service for 4.5 years and 2.5 years overseas, and Nan wanted to get a family started, and I didn't want to, because to start a family and go overseas just didn't seem right to me, and I think that's understandable. But it wasn't for that, who knows what the difference would be. The situation would be different in our family, you know. But it all ties in with the question about social life and everything, but I thought that would sort of round it out.
What was Nan like as a young girl? What else do you remember about her?
She was she's a petite brunette who got into it with her father, who was very domineering, and he caught her smoking once and raised such hell and he made a smoker out of her, because the more he resisted it, the more she insisted on it. And as a result of that, she was a smoker all of her life until finally in 1980, a routine physical disclosed a glitch on the lower lobe of her right lung. It was cancerous, and they operated on it, and they thought that they were going to have one of the first cancer lung surgeries in history, practically, because the percentage of successes in lung surgery are very, very remote. But it turned out that it showed up again in a different part of her anatomy, and a little sore that she thought that was just a little nothing, and they found out that it had spread, and she went through chemotherapy and radiation and everything, but it kept on spreading, and it was... I remember my brother and his wife and our kids, we were all in the hospital in Fort Lauderdale when the surgeon came out of the operating room, and he looked at the kids and he says, "Don't you ever smoke, because this surgery was all the result of smoking." He said that the lower lobe of her right lung that they took out reeked of tobacco. Isn't that amazing? And, you know, I used to occasionally, starting in the Army, I used to occasionally smoke a cigar. And none of the kids ever smoked again after that, if they ever did. It was really a traumatic period in our lives, of course. But she was Nan was a petite, 97 pounds. And when we were watching our diets and everything, I would always take the skin off the chicken before I ate it and everything. Kids like fried chicken. And Nan would not only eat the skin on her fried chicken, but she'd eat the skin on the fried chicken that I took off of my chicken. And you know what? When we went to get our cholesterol test, hers was... like 110, and mine was 225, something like that. She had a lower cholesterol than I knew. I didn't even know they went that low. But each anatomy is a little different. Anyway, I'm getting too far afield here.
What do you remember that she looked like as a child?
A little petite. rascal. That's about the best way. She was, she was, she was playful, bright, cheery. But I never really got serious, had any serious thoughts about her until the early part of 41. When her sister Bobby died, and the families were together in this whole traumatic period, she had a boyfriend who came. She was going to had gone to school in Columbus, Ohio, and this boyfriend came to Marion and took a job with her dad in the dry goods store that he ran, a big store, and the main retail operation in downtown Marion. And her dad did not like him at all, I wasn't crazy about him myself, but I hadn't dated Nan yet. And the more he didn't like Lenny, the more her father didn't like Lenny. The more serious it got, and it come pretty near, you know, the reaction. And but anyway, without my being involved, other than an observer at that stage, I learned all about this after we. Got together, but Lenny turned out to be like Nan's dad thought he was. He was a no goodnik. That sounds a little like rubbing his nose in it here for me right now. But in any event, she finally got tired of him, and he left and left town and. And we had a date, and sort of a remote, neighborly, friendly date, and our relationship grew. And then when I was just a coincidence of timing, when I went to the Army, when we started a correspondence, and found out that we had more in common than we thought, I was sort of pushed away from her. Before I left for the Army, because my parents were very friendly with her parents, and they were pushing for this union. And, you know, the more the parents interfered, the less you want of anything like that, you know. And I was pushed away from her because of that. And I think she probably was the same way, but when we got separated, it was a andere Geschichte, as the story goes, a little different story.
What were the names of her parents?
George and Helen Zimmerman.
Do you have stories to tell about them as next-door neighbors?
Well, George Zimmerman was known as a real tough, grouchy little reprobate. And it's once you got to know him, he was just as soft as apple pie. He was just a real nice guy. But people didn't know that because they always had the impression of him, the strict employer in the store. He opened the store in the morning, greeted all the employees, closed the store at night, and turned out the lights. And but everybody said that they were afraid of him. They couldn't talk to him. He would give them a dirty look, and they would cringe. But the truth of the matter was, he was really quite a nice guy. But when he got something in his head, he pushed for it. And Nan had a good relationship, like sisters with her mother. Her mother was just a doll. But they got into it. She was quite a bit younger than him. Nan's mother was quite a bit younger than her father. And she was a little bit more understanding about today's age. And if she would have been left to her own, I think she could probably have talked Nan out of becoming the incessant smoker that she became. But when her father made a big frontal attack repetitiously at every night at dinner over her smoking, he made her a full-time smoker, and you know, it was just a terrible misjudgment on, of course, you got to understand this whole thing in the context. He was crushed by the loss of his second daughter, and that was a terrible tragedy. You can imagine they were both beyond childbearing age at that point, and she was a vivacious personality, outgoing, extrovert. She had every record that Nelson Eddy and Jeanette MacDonald ever published. She had it in a collection. We should have kept them. We got rid of them later. Yeah, but everybody in town knew her, her Nan's sister, Bobby, because she was just that kind of a personality. And he never recovered from her tragic death. At the prime of life, and such a bright, you know, they were both very bright and top grades in school, and that tragedy, followed by the discovery of a little malignancy in his throat where he lost his voice and he could just whisper, added to the mystique about him and how people were afraid of him and afraid to even talk to him. And behind the scenes, he contributed to all worthy causes and loaned money to friends that she should never have loaned money to and lost it because they washed it down the drain and things like that that I got to know about him that not too many other people did. But when I tell people in Marion who knew him what I'm telling you here now, a lot of them would have a hard time believing it. He was just a real softy who gave that impression that he felt he had to have for the stern discipline of the staff in the store and so forth. And they all knew him and loved him because with his gruffness, they knew that he was a real softy underneath it all.
Had the Zimmermans been in this country for quite a while?
Yeah, Helen was born in this country. George was born in this country too. I think. Yeah, they were born in. George was born in New York, and Helen was born in Chicago someplace. And he married late in life, and she was quite a bit younger. But it was a nice marriage until it started going to pieces with these two tragic stories that I just told you about the loss of the of Bobby and the, you know, the if they had hindsight and foresight, it's always two different things, you know, but they were told at Mayo's if they would have gotten here there a month sooner. So he was blaming himself. They should have, but, you know, you can blame and blame and blame. What's done is done. But the suddenness of her death, it was just absolutely unbelievable through the whole community and the shock. And then his malignancy, and he lived 10 years after that malignancy because the doctor got him to a specialist that operated on him and took out part of his voice box and larynx and gave him 10 more years of life. But they were a couple of very interesting people. Nan's mother lived 8 or 9 years later, and she was just a delightful person, and Nan had a very nice, warm relationship with her mother.
How did the Zimmermans feel about their daughter marrying the son of an immigrant? They were more established in this country.
I felt just as welcomed into that family as I could have been. My dad and George were very good friends, not in the same level or anything. George was, you might say, on the other side of the tracks. We were from down there at Dorton, and he had always been up on the hill on the other side of the tracks. But no, I don't think there was any problem there at all because I got along. My dad got along well with George and Nan's mother, and never had too much in common with my mother, who spoke with an accent and liked to cook, and Nan's mother liked to dress up and go out and have someone else do her cooking for her, that sort of thing, you know. But all in all, it worked out very nice. I'll never forget when we got married, in Denver. I had the wedding all planned in Marion and had to cancel because all the leaves had been canceled. And I never could figure out why they had to cancel the leaves of the Cooks and Bakers School because in Pearl Harbor, but it's the psychology of the day. But we got an apartment out there, 5635 East 6th Avenue. I still remember the address. And the first night that we couldn't go up any place on a honeymoon, but I could live off the base at that time. And the first night that that we'd gotten into this furnished apartment, Nan didn't have anything to do except to polish the piano and a few things every day until she got tired of it. And then she went make dinner one night and she called her mother long distance to find out how to make roast beef. It was that kind of a storybook beginning, but it was a fascinating year. And then when George and Helen Zimmerman came to Denver to visit us, then we really got acquainted and I really got to know what really nice people they were, because I didn't know them that well at home. But anyway, it was we were married for 37 years, and it was a very fine marriage, and everybody was happy about it. But I sometimes really wonder if we would have gotten any closer and wound up getting married if it hadn't been for the war, because her parents were too much in favor of it and my parents were too much in favor of it, and we both felt like we were being pushed into something that was none of their business. Just that simple. You can understand that.
Let's back up just a little bit. I want to talk a little bit more about your teenage years.
Okay.
Who were some of your heroes during your teenage years? Political heroes or singers or actors?
I'm not sure that I can really remember. I've always been interested in current events and politics. And I used to think that Roosevelt was a pretty great guy who brought us out of the deep, dark depression. And of course that was in the 30s, and I know what the depression did to my parents and the difficulties they went through, and I knew that I couldn't go to school, which I wanted to do, and folks wanted me to, because, well, part of it was the fact that after having four boys around the house, I was the only one left, and I had a terrible guilt feeling about leaving sort of precipitously after, so soon after the others had left. But there were a lot of wonderful actors in those days. I remember the John Barrymore days and the real old-time movies that really, to my way of thinking, are still the very best movies with few exceptions. And the political arena, I found myself giving evidence of being independent in my political thinking even then, because I remember when what's his name in Elwood, Indiana, ran for the presidency, and he's a Republican. His name's on the end of my tongue. Anyway, I found myself early in the formative stages, especially in regard to this civics class that I mentioned before under Alvin G. Allen, where we could discuss things openly and frankly and honestly and without any questions about it, just to discuss what you want to discuss. But I found myself supporting Democratic candidates and Republican candidates, and I had an awful hard time explaining that to anybody. And as a matter of fact, I've always thought, and to this day keep fighting for an open primary, which you have in Wisconsin, I understand. But in Indiana, when you go to the primary, you got to declare you're a Democrat or Republican. Now, I sort of go back and forth because I'm not either one. I vote for the best man, and that was what I recollect from the days that you referred to. And it went back all the way back to the days of my civic teacher in high school.
You graduated from high school in 33.
Mm-hmm.
These were the Depression years.
Mm-hmm.
What did the world look like to you then?
It looked like a place that was in the need of a great deal of help. And, the World War I was supposed to have been the war to end wars until we had a go-around in World War II. And that was really the war to end all wars. And in between, in my formative years there, was the horrendous aspects of a horrible depression, when the jokes used to be this former retail mogul was selling apples, was buying apples 3 for a dime and selling them 2 for a nickel. And, how could you make any money doing that? Well, he didn't make any money, but what a volume he did. Those are the kind of jokes they had in that era, because everything was based on economics and hardships and difficulties that there just didn't seem to be any answer for. And, we still were fighting the getting out of the Depression when we commenced to build up for World War II, and it was the war years, the preparation period for those war years that really pulled us out of the Depression. But, of course, I think we were all smart enough to learn a lot of the things and rearrange some things from the standpoint of the World Bank and the economy. We used to, whenever we had a depression, we used to prime the pump and zoom it up so fast that it would fall back down again. And now, as we see evidence of today, when you're doing things to ease the depression, you do them very gradually, because it's a very delicate road up, and if you lunge too fast, you're going to fall off. And we're seeing, I think we're doing a good job right now of gradually coming out of a depression and being very cautious about how fast we let it happen. I think interest rates are going to go down some more. But there are a lot of people that think they should go down sooner, and there's a lot of people that remember the experiences of yesteryear and know what can happen. If it goes up too fast, it'll go down faster. But we're getting away from the subject here.
What happened to your father's business during the Depression?
He struggled along and lost a lot of money from people that couldn't pay their bills. Not that didn't, but that couldn't, because there were a lot of people laid off in the glass industry there. But I remember he went to some of the kind of financial institutions that charge exceeding high rates, because they felt that his loans were probably very risky, because the economy in the area was very bad, and even the farmers were having trouble. But Pop, fortunately, held his own and still remembered the days of barter, and he let farmers pay their bills with eggs that he could sell or give to other people. And it was very difficult, and he come pretty close a few times to really being in major trouble, but they pulled out of it with a lot of hard work and perseverance.
Do you think that living through the Depression affected you over the years?
Well, yeah, but it definitely did affect us, and made us a lot more thoughtful, I think, about matters of economics. It did me, at any rate, because